Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. I'm your host for today, Varad Devde, together with my co-host, Ursula Rudenberg. Hello, Ursula.
Hello, and hello to you, the listener.
Today, we will be learning about the organic farm at Iowa State, operated by students at the university. We will be speaking with Brian Tuckley, who is the student manager at this organic farm.
That's something to look forward to, and we also have with us in our studio Allison Walter from the Ames Convention and Visitors Bureau. As you know, the city of Ames has a number of events and activities during the summer, and so we're going to be learning about the month of July. And I hope everybody, including myself and you, enjoyed this beautiful weekend. We were very fortunate to have the kind of weather that we had this weekend. It's going to be nice again today and tomorrow on Tuesday. And then probably for the rest of the week, it's predicted more rain and thunderstorms. However, 4th of July is predicted to have good weather. So we do have that to look forward to, and we'll be talking about that soon with Allison. But before we get started, Dvard, I'd like to have you introduce yourself a little bit. You're our summer intern.
Yes.
At KHOI. Tell us a little bit about who you are. Where are you interning at?
I'm a senior in journalism at Iowa State. The next year is going to be my last one, and I'm currently interning at KHOI Community Radio. This is a really good place to intern. I've enjoyed my time.
Why do you say that?
I've just learned a lot, met a lot of new people, and it's a different environment as opposed to a commercial station, and I really like that.
So you would encourage somebody else to do it?
Yes, definitely.
It's good.
It's been a great experience. It's been a few weeks now, so.
Well, we've really enjoyed having you, too.
Mm-hmm.
It's been very interesting to work with you. You're at the Greenlee School of Journalism?
Yes, I'm at the Greenlee School of Journalism.
What do you have a goal as to what you want to do when you graduate?
Yes, so my primary major is journalism, and my secondary major is political science. And when I graduate, I want to have something. So I'm interested in political reporting or feature reporting, something like that.
Mm-hmm. And where are you from?
I'm from the western part of India.
Uh-huh. And you came to Iowa State to study journalism?
Yes, that was 3 years ago.
Mm-hmm. Well, very nice. It's great to have you. And you actually have, we're focusing a little bit on summer today on this show.
Mm-hmm.
And you went out and took a look at the Iowa State student farm and have a report for us. So tell us what we're going to be hearing.
Yes, so I went to the organic student farm. There's a farming operation right here in Ames. We might be familiar with people who practice organic farming in their backyard or as part of a community garden. However, this is a farming operation managed by students at the Iowa State University. We have a short segment from the time I spent at the farm. So let's listen to that.
Okay.
A small patch of land at the Horticulture Research Station effectively breaks the pattern of corn and soy farms spread over several hundred acres. This patch of land is a unique organic farm operation managed by students at Iowa State.
Now probably a few people head down there, work on that. And then the peelings. Actually, you know what? Let's take this salad mix before the peas.
Students part of this university club gather and sell vegetable produce. On a scheduled workday, a group of students carpool together from campus to get to the Horticulture Department station, located on the north side of Ames. We visited the farm on a workday to see what it looks like. About 10 students are working on different aspects of the farm. Bryn Takel is the student farm manager, instructing other student workers at the farm.
Guys, are you going to go down salad mix? Perfect.
You can work on this and sell mix here by hand.
There may be a couple of hand hoes left on that wagon, so that's probably the best way to get those.
A few students are turning the soil, others are weeding the crops, while others are using some of their equipment. A lone tractor stands in one corner of the farm. We try our hand at taking out small weeds growing around the crops. The plant plot itself is divided into several smaller rows. Each small row grows a different vegetable.
Where should I start? So down at the end there, we've got kale, we've got broccoli, we've got kohlrabi down there, we've got chard, turnips, radishes. We just harvested radishes, so we're out of radishes. But turnips, coming here, we just started some corn. They're working on spinach here, greens mix down there. Those four is the same as this greens mix here. It's a kind of a green salad mix. Two kinds of peas, harvested our cilantro. We've got beets, we've got spinach, we've got peas, we've got dill, parsley, basil, carrots, celeriac. It's kind of a succession. Plant, weed, harvest, plant more, weed more, harvest more.
Welcome back. We are learning about the organic farm in Ames, managed by students at Iowa State. Members of the club work roughly 3 hours per week from the start of summer through the end of fall. A chance to practice farming with other students and gather produce are just some reasons students become part of the farm operation.
My name is Ben Spick. I will be a senior in anthropology and religious studies here at the university, and this is my second growing season working with the student organic farm. My parents always had a garden growing up. We grew up in a rural part of south central Iowa, so we always had a garden, always had vegetables growing during the growing season. And I thought that would be something that I would really miss when I was here up at campus. So after my sophomore year, when I knew I would be staying up at campus over the summer, I got involved with the farm. I contacted them, and they found me a chair. So I got involved then last growing season.
The share of vegetable boxes is also a pretty good incentive for college students.
It's definitely a good trade-off. I mean, for what I put into it, I get a lot out of it, sometimes more than I can get through myself.
I'm Brandon Alt, and I got involved with this farm through Ben, and I basically got involved because in middle school I had the same setup that he had at home. We did a lot of gardening, we did a lot of vegetables. There was way too many green beans at one point, you know, the general gist of exploring your own farm area. And I really missed it. So when Ben told me that he'd done it last year, and then he's like, I'm looking for someone to split a share with. So I'm like, I will split a share with you. Mm-hmm. I will do 3 hours a week to get some produce and just get to have my hands in the dirt again.
Undergraduate and graduate students are involved in different farm activities during fall, spring, and summer. During the harvest season, they walk away with their fruit of labor, a box of fresh produce from the farm. For KHOI Radio, this is Varad Devde.
That was our short segment from our visit to the student organic farm. We have with us in our studio Bryn Tuckley, the manager of this farm, to tell us more about this farm operation. He is a graduate student in horticulture at Iowa State University. Welcome, Bryn.
Thank you for having me.
So tell us more about how the organic farm operation works. How do students contribute, and what do they get in return?
Sure. When students sign up to work for the student organic farm, what they are committing to is 3 hours of work during the summer, and in return they get a box of vegetables every week. We have a small fee for our work shareholders, but a lot of them will actually share their share, like Ben was talking about in the piece, because that's a lot of vegetables for one person to get through in a week. So for 3 hours of work during the week, they do weeding and harvesting and regular maintenance, and then they get a box of vegetables.
Okay, and what does the annual schedule look like? When is the time that most of the students are busy out at the farm?
Most of the work is being done right now. June, July, and August, when students are off, is when the main weeding and harvesting is taking place. We're moving from weeding, mainly weeding, into doing a little more heavy harvesting, which is occurring more on a more than once a week basis. So we'll harvest at every work session now. But it started in February with planting seeds in the greenhouse, and we'll continue until October or November, until all the vegetables are out of the field.
Mm-hmm. And I would guess there are not as many students around over the summer. So how do you manage with that?
A lot of our work share members are actually graduate students who are around during the summer. We have a mix of graduate students and undergrads, but a good share of us are graduate students, and we're around in the summer, and we're hungry. So it's a good incentive to go out and work.
Mm-hmm. And is the farmland at the research station, is it owned by our department? Is it owned by the university?
It's part of the university system, the display and research farms. It used to be part of the horticulture department, but now it's run by the system, the hort system.
Okay. And is it just given to you by the university to operate, or is it like on a lease basis?
You know, it's something that we've had since the 90s. 96, I think, was our first year. And we actually started out having a plot both at the horticulture research station as well as little plot on campus over by the insectary. And it just became that having some of the conveniences of machinery and a little bit larger piece of land was more convenient out at the horticulture research station. They have some facilities that we use for packing and cleaning that they didn't have at the insectary. So, yeah, we've just started working out there a little bit more, and it seems to be more convenient out there.
Mm-hmm. So the club started in 96?
Yeah, we started in 96, and I don't have the original numbers of how many members we had then. Our history is a little vague, but we've been going for almost 20 years now. So,
and tell us something more about your goals. Your focus is on organic farming. Oh, why do you think that's important?
So we're not certified organic. We use organic practices, minimal herbicides, or no synthetic herbicides. We use all organic certified products out on the farm. We want to give students a picture of what it's like to grow food or to run a farm. You know, if it's something that the student might want to look into after school, or maybe as something they could do as an internship during the summer. But yeah, we want to teach students in general what food looks like.
Mm-hmm. And what are some organic practices that you have at the farm?
Well, it's a lot of manual labor, a lot of hand weeding, a lot of hand hoeing. We do some tilling. We're not using pesticides for bugs, so we've got a tolerance level of a little more insect pressure than maybe a non-organic commercial farm would have or other practices like that. But we try to do the best we can, and we're a student-run organization and know that we're doing the best we can and are willing to settle for not perfection. We strive for perfection, but settle for excellence. So,
okay. And are most of your students from the ag and horticulture programs?
No, they're from all over the university. Actually, we have a strong group of they're from all over, really. I'm thinking of sociologists. I'm thinking of agronomists. I'm thinking of creative writers. I'm thinking of folks from everywhere. So yeah, it's an interesting mix of folks, folks from design and everywhere.
Mm-hmm. And how does involvement with the organic farm a matter to them? Do some of the students earn credit, or is there any sort of program?
No, people are doing it because they love to do it, because mm-hmm. they grew up with it maybe, because they're interested in local foods, they're interested in the food system, or want to learn more about any of those things. So they do it because they get some food out of it, but I think they do it mainly because they get to get outside and dig in the dirt a little bit.
Mm-hmm. And what's the size of the land that you're currently working on?
Currently we have about 2 acres under production, which there is more land available. 2 acres is all that we can handle. So it's enough of a challenge to keep that in check. So we definitely have our hands full with that.
Mm-hmm. And do you experiment with any of your techniques?
We're always experimenting, trying new things. In fact, we've got a couple of new crops that we're trying this year. We're trying to experiment with some perennial crops, which we have not done very much in the past. So we've got some perennial herbs out there. We started a rhubarb patch, started some a strawberry patch this year, which we've not done in the past, a different kind of a system. So we're playing, you know, we're playing with vegetables, and that's why they call it science.
And how is it working out with the new crops?
Well, we're eating strawberries, so I guess pretty good. Some of the perennial crops, the rhubarb, some of the herbs, we will not see this group will not see the profit from that, or those will be crops that will be harvested in the future. So with perennials, you kind of plan for the future. We're hoping that the next few years they'll get some harvest out of those crops.
Mm-hmm. We should mention that the farm at Iowa State is just one of the many farms throughout the country affiliated with the university and managed by students. Even a lot of liberal arts colleges have some variation of a farm managed by students. These farm operations fall under different models of farming. Bryn, the farm at Iowa State is described as a model of community-supported agriculture. Tell us more about that.
Community-supported agriculture, or CSAs, as you hear a lot, are farms that are supported by the members that get the food from them. So, in essence, it's volunteers in our case, or workshare members in our case. They share in both the profit and the success. So they pay a little bit of money up front. Our students pay $50 at the beginning, and that helps buy some of the seeds, equipment, fuel for tractors, things along those lines. And then with their work, they're giving us their labor as part of their fee for the rest of the season. Now, we do also have a few, we've got 25 workshare members, and we have 20 paid, what we call paid share members. And those are members that are, they want to be part of our group, they want to be part of our system, they want to get a box of food every week, but they don't want to come out and work, or they can't come out and work. We have faculty and staff mainly that do this. And for that, they pay their money up front. It's a $350 fee, and they, again, that helps to buy supplies and pay for our operating costs during the year, and then they just get the box of vegetables. So there are farms like that around the state and around the country, and I think they're becoming more popular. It's becoming a way to eat locally and eat seasonally and experiment with some food that you may not have usually otherwise eaten.
Mm-hmm. Can this also be described as a model of cooperative farming as students are working for their share?
Yeah, I guess so. It's not a community garden or some that type of a thing. We have a crop plan that's set up in the spring, and we grow those crops throughout the year. So, yeah, I guess you could call it co-op farming. I mean, they put in some work and they get some food back, so mm-hmm. Sure.
And do you also have some faculty members involved with the club?
We have a couple of faculty advisors that kind of look over our shoulders, and not just when we're getting out of line. The other faculty are the ones that are getting a share. So we have some paid share members that are faculty. We don't have any work share members that are faculty. We keep those all as students. And some students share with spouses as a member if they're not a student.
So. Mm-hmm. You work with instructors in the ag programs or horticulture programs with any of your experiments or things like that?
No, this is just students having fun. So This is not school-related, not related.
Not a research class.
No, this is just out playing in the field. So it's definitely not associated with anything official.
Okay. And is membership limited to Iowa State students in the club?
Any student, we have a fairly small group. There's only 25 work share members or work shares that we have. So again, since we're not a big club and we don't have a big piece of land, so we have a small work share list, and we keep that available to students, graduate and undergraduate students.
Mm-hmm. How do students manage to have time for that during the fall and spring semesters when everyone is busy with class load?
Yeah, that is a challenge. So it's a challenge in the spring and it's a challenge in the fall to get people out. We reduce the number of hours that you have to work in the spring. We say 2 hours versus 3 hours in May and in September when school is started. But the field usually gets a little more weedy in the fall, and people stop showing up a little bit. So it's definitely more of a challenge to manage some of those volunteer aspects when you get to that type of year. But there are still people that are interested in it, and 3 hours isn't a whole lot of time. Most people can figure it out.
What are some other challenges that you have in your routine operations?
Well, I think that the typical challenges that every gardener experiences: weeds and water and insects and crop diseases and all the things that you would experience growing your normal garden, just on a bigger scale, knowing that somebody is waiting on Monday for that box of food that you're hoping to provide.
Do you have any future plans for the farm?
Oh, lots of plans, sure. It is one of the challenges is that our group of officers will be turned over for next year. So my plans or our group's plans may be very different from the next group's ideas or what they're thinking for the farm or where they want to take it. Having our faculty advisor kind of keeping the ship on track is important, but by starting some of these perennial crops, that was kind of our group's idea to let's try some of these and see if we can keep them under control and keep them going for the next few years and see where that goes. But mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a challenge to keep everything in line, and weeds are our biggest issue.
How do you plan to transition with graduating student members, student leaders, and the next crop of leaders?
I don't know yet. I'll get back to you on that. It's like I said, everybody's got a little bit, each group will have a little bit different makeup of their officer group and of the workshare group. And we get a lot of folks that have done this for more than 1 year as the workshare members. So there's a turnover there, but there are folks that come back. So there's a little bit of a legacy that continues from year to year with that. And you know, I see myself not maybe being an officer next year, but being a workshare member if there are any available. It's a great way to just kind of keep your feet or your fingers in the mix of things and mm-hmm. Still be a part of it.
Are you a busy man as the farm manager?
I'm busy, yeah. I'm working, like you said, I'm a graduate student. I'm trying to finish up a master's this summer, early fall. So I've got thesis writing that I'm doing this summer as well as working out at the farm. So, yeah, busy. Definitely busy.
And could you tell us if there's any way people in Ames who are not affiliated with Iowa State can be a part of the club in any way?
So not really. Since we are a university club, the students obviously are the workshare members. And then we keep our paid share members, our faculty and staff, just because we are a university club. So it's pretty much just a university club.
Okay. It was great to know about your farm operation, Bryn. And thanks for joining us today.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Welcome back to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. I'm one of your hosts, Ursula Rudenberg, together with Rod Varty, and that was Lurgadon with Dancing Eyes. And before we go to our next guest, Allison Walter is here, and we're looking forward to speaking to her. But I wanted to share some information that I was reading on Saturday on CNN online. And it kind of goes in contrast, in a way, to what you were, Rod, that you were talking about earlier about the ISU farm, because we are so blessed with this incredible summer where we have this alternation between brilliant sun and rain. And on Saturday, I was reading an article that CNN reported that in California, up to 5,000 residential lawns are vanishing each month as part of a turf removal and water conservation program. Residents are tearing out their lawns and replacing them with drought-resistant gardens in response to cash incentive programs that are being created to relieve the stress on water consumption. And in Southern California, there's a wholesaler that delivers water to 26 cities and water districts in Southern California, and they're paying residents $2 for each square foot of lawn that's being removed. And furthermore, homeowners in the city of Los Angeles can collect another $1.75 a square foot through a water conservation program by the Los Angeles Department of Water and Power. And when you think about it, that can really add up to a sizable amount of rebates. So according to CNN, the project is expected to save more than 70 million gallons of water over 10 years, enough water for 160 households. So a cottage industry is now arising in Southern California in particular, with a new type of landscapers and fledgling companies that are specializing in stripping front yards and restoring them with California-friendly plants. And these plants aren't all prickly cactus. In fact, many have flowers and they explode with colors, with plants like the yellow lantana, kangaroo paw, and flowering salvias such as the Texas Ranger and Mexican sage, which their names alone are worth having because the names alone are so colorful. So California plants like that really require virtually no water. One firm, Turf Terminators, does the job for free in exchange for collecting the rebates that are being offered. It'll even do the paperwork to ensure the company gets paid. And the company estimates it's overhauling up to 1,200 yards a month, with passing motorists and word-of-mouth referrals generating new orders every day. So that's some of the interesting information about what's happening in the our dry counterpart out west, where they're suffering from a drought, and also the innovation that is resulting from the adaptability of the human race at its best. So good to know that what we're having here in Iowa with the summer weather is really makes us very, very fortunate. And speaking of fortunate, Allison, you're with us today.
Good morning.
And it's so nice to have you again for your monthly check-in about what we can do in public areas in Ames. It's really enjoyable. So thank you for joining us. And let's talk July.
Sure. Well, it's a big, big holiday weekend coming up here.
In case our listener does not know about the convention and the Visitors Bureau, can you just say a word or two about what it exactly does?
Sure. The Convention and Visitors Bureau is a marketing organization for the community. We work to bring visitors to Ames, and sometimes that's in the form of a convention or a conference. Sometimes it's in the form of a sporting event or a leisure event. And then we also work when people are here to help them know what there is to do in the community. We are funded by Hotel Motel Tax. So when a visitor stays in the hotel in Ames, they pay a hotel motel tax, which goes through the state and the city, and then it's turned over to the Convention and Visitors Bureau with the idea that we will spend that money to market the community to bring more visitors to the community.
Okay, well, thank you for a refresher. And let's talk 4th of July.
Sure.
Do hear that the weather is predicted to be very nice for the 4th of July.
That sounds like a good thing. Yes. lots to do outside over the 4th of July, of course.
So start at the beginning. I know it's a series of events that are happening. So what happens first?
Right. Well, the weekend kind of kicks off on Thursday evening with the Band Shell concert. And that's a weekly event in the Band Shell at 6th and Duff, the Durham Band Shell. Every week, the Ames Municipal Band plays. But, of course, with the Independence Holiday, they'll do a very patriotic program. And they're also having the Ames Choral Society join them. And there's always always a pre-concert at 7, and that will be the Ames Choral Society. And this year, the Ames Choral Society received an Ames Community Grant, which is something else that the Convention and Visitors Bureau does. We set aside a portion of that hotel-motel tax into a separate fund, and then there's an application process for community organizations to apply for grant funding to host events that will improve the quality of life for Ames residents. And the Ames Choral Society applied for a grant last fall to receive some funding to buy some songbooks. And they are called Get America Singing Again is the name of those books. They bought about 300 copies of those books. So when they do a concert, they share them with the audience and they have a lot of good...
It's like a sing-along.
Yeah, and they do a sing-along. Mm-hmm. Exactly. Mm-hmm. So they'll do some of those patriotic songs that you probably know the words to, but there might be a few times where you have to mumble watermelon, watermelon, or, whatever.
Or you don't know the second verse,
right? You don't know the second verse. So they'll do a concert starting at 7 of sing-alongs and some of their own performances. And then at 8 o'clock, the municipal band will join them, and they'll do lots of patriotic songs and some sing-alongs there as well. And then at the end of the concert, everyone turns their books back in, and they use them for the next event. So they did have a concert yesterday as well, mm-hmm. at St. Paul Lutheran Church.
That's right.
So that's the big event for Thursday evening. And the fireworks this year are on Friday evening, the 3rd, which will be a great opportunity to get the family out and enjoy the fireworks and not worry about having to go to work the next morning.
Okay, so explain again why the fireworks are on the 3rd of July instead
sure.
of the 4th of July.
Sure. Well, there's a number of factors involved, but one thing is in Ames, they have to be started by an electronic system versus someone actually going with a fire stick and starting that. So that's a little bit more expensive and then a little bit limited on companies.
That's a safety precaution.
Right, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
So the young professionals of Ames work with the Convention and Visitors Bureau as the co-sponsors of the firework. And they found when they went to contract with the fireworks company that it was a much less expensive to do it on either the 3rd or the 5th than it was to do it on the 4th. So they made the decision to sign the contract that they would either do it on the 3rd or the 5th for, I think, the next 3 years. They've done it for a couple and they've extended it on mm-hmm. because of the cost savings. So they also do some fundraising and they will provide some porta potties and there's always the need for traffic control and that type of thing. So that's the portion that the young professionals of Ames play in the whole display. And then the Ames Community Grant program pays for the actual fireworks display. And then, of course, the university and the city are involved as well.
And where will the fireworks be this year?
They will be in the same location that they have been for years, over near Iowa State Center. So you can park in the Iowa State Center parking lots, in the Jack Trice Stadium parking lot, in the intramural fields around that area. Bring your blanket and your lawn chairs and your picnic and come out and enjoy. They suggest lot G7, and that is where they will be shot from, and then you can see them from anywhere around in that area.
Now, we've had a few questions about whether Ryman Gardens will be doing a celebration like they did last year. That was for a special year, right?
Right. That was with the sesquicentennial. So Ryman Gardens will be open, and they are allowing you to bring coolers in and lawn chairs in, but they will not have the food vendors and
the special concert.
The concert, right.
Mm-hmm. But you can still go there and watch.
Yep, and they will stay open until the end of the fireworks so that families can enjoy the surroundings there at Ryman Gardens as well. So, now, if by chance there is weather issues, the rain date for the fireworks will be the 5th, on Sunday evening instead of on Friday evening.
Weather issues are not predicted.
Good. That sounds great. There's a couple other things going on Friday as well. The bookends at the Bandshell concerts have started, and they have concerts on Fridays over the lunch hour, 11:30 to 1:30, again at the Durham Bandshell. And this week's performer is Triggerfish. And then also...
Bookends at the Bandshell are concerts.
That's a program with the public library and the Parks and Recreation Department. And they've put together this series of concerts, and they call them bookends because they're on Friday and Sunday afternoon. So Friday noon to kick off your weekend, and then Sunday evening to wrap it up. And
so that's Friday noon, Sunday evening.
Right.
Okay.
But I think this Sunday there is not a concert due to the holiday. So.
Okay.
And also Snooze Hill, which is the winery out near Madrid, they do weekly concert series and also do a Friday and Sunday performance. And Friday evening, this week it's Code Blue doing some classic rocking country music. And then on Sunday, they do an afternoon concert, and that's 2 to 5. And this week they have Hot Tamale and the Red Hot, and that's some blues, rock, boogie music. So again, you can take your lawn chair, your picnic, and enjoy the music out at Snooze Hill Winery on the weekends.
Okay.
And then, of course, Saturday is the 4th of July, and so there's lots going on the 4th. You can start the morning early with the Friendship Arc Annual 5 on the 4th run, and that's out at Ada Hayden Park. And they will do a 5K run walk bright and early at 8 a.m., and they do this as a fundraiser for the Friendship Arc Homes, and that provides residential and community living services for adults with intellectual disabilities.
So you pay to be part of the run.
Correct. Yep.
Mm-hmm. And anybody can run?
Anyone can run. And they're actually also doing a free kids run at 7:45. So you can bring the family out, and everyone gets an opportunity to run. And again, it's at Ada Hayden, so it's a beautiful setting for a 5K run. And you can pre-register on their website, which is friendshiparc.org.
Okay.
And then after you've run your 5K, there is the pancake breakfast at City Hall, and the Ames City Council members are out and helping I think they bus tables. I don't think they actually cook the pancakes. But this is the fourth year that the city has sponsored that, and it's always held in conjunction with the 4th of July parade that's on Main Street. So
a city council member is going to be bussing your table?
I think so.
So that's a great opportunity to ask them what's going on.
There you go. Yes, exactly. You can bend their ear a little bit. Mm-hmm. They might even bring you a few more pancakes if you need them. So pancakes, sausage, coffee.
And this is where again?
It's all right in front of City Hall.
Outside?
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. And
so are the tables on the lawn? Or
I
where
think
are
so.
They?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yep. And okay. I think they have some tents put up as well.
And they have grills or something outside?
Yep.
Okay.
It's amazing. The gentleman that does pancakes is set up to do this for large groups. And he just, by the time you get flipping one of, pouring them, it's time to go back to the beginning and start flipping them. And then he goes back and starts serving them. And it's quite a process. It's kind of fun to watch. They're also helping kids with their bikes to get them decorated to be in the parade. So bring your bike and come and have some breakfast and decorate the bike. And then
and what time again is that?
It starts at 8:30.
8:30.
Yep.
And
they
we all know
up.
Where City Hall is, but it's on Clark between 5th and 6th.
Between 5th and 6th. The bookmobile will be part of the parade, and they're asking kids to come out and be in the parade with them and with Smiles. And
Smiles is the dog?
The dog, yep. The big blue dog. And so you can meet in front of the public library, and of course, again, you can bring your bike or your stroller, and they'll be doing some decorating between 9:30 and 10:30. And they have this superhero series that we talked about the last time I was on. And so they are inviting kids to dress as a superhero and be a part of the parade with them. So, don your cape and join in the fun. And they'll be walking in the parade route. And the parade is set to start at 11. And it will go up Main Street and back on 5th Street. And so there are a lot of entries. This year's Grand Marshal is Harrison Barnes, which is kind of fun to having just won the big championship to have him in Ames. So join all that fun and stake out a spot on the street and be ready for that.
That'll be very, very exciting to see him at this moment.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then after the parade, the University Museums is inviting everyone to come to the Farmhouse Museum. And they are celebrating an old-fashioned Independence Day. Mm. So they'll be doing lawn games, some of those old-fashioned lawn games, and they will have the Onion Creek Cloggers and Band, and they'll be performing around 1:30. At 2 o'clock, they're going to open a time capsule. And it's amazing to think that they have a time capsule from 1876 that they are opening. And because the farmhouse is 155 years mm-hmm. old. It was the first building on campus.
It was the first building on campus.
And it's a big 40th anniversary for University Museum, so they've been doing a lot of things throughout the year to celebrate that. Like I mentioned, there'll be the Victorian Games played on the lawn, and the Gilbert Tractor Club will be bringing their tractors to town, showing lots of historic tractors and balers, and they're inviting you to bring a picnic in your chairs and just enjoy the afternoon from noon to 4 on the lawn at the farmhouse on Central Campus. So it'll be a busy day. You can take part in all these activities or a few throughout the day and enjoy time with family and friends.
And describe again, where is the parade going to be?
It will be down Main Street. It starts near City Hall mm-hmm. and goes east on Main Street, and then it'll go north, I think, on Burnett, right here past the station, and then back on 5th Street back towards City Hall.
And again, the times?
They kick off at 11.
At 11.
Yep.
Okay.
So, and people will be lining up. I think a lot of people bring their chairs and their blankets and stake out a spot on the street, and then they pop over to City Hall to have their pancakes and then come back. And I think a lot of the stores are in the Main Street Cultural District will be open as well, mm-hmm. so you mm-hmm. can do that while you're here. Oh, and also at about 9 o'clock, the Bill Riley Talent Competition will be going on, and they do that near Tom Evans Plaza there.
Right,
before
out on the
parade.
Street. They
out
have
on
a
the
stage.
Street. Yes, mm-hmm. exactly. Yeah. So lots going on.
Okay. Now, you had also mentioned the superhero thing with mm-hmm. The young people. I see here that you have something on the 2nd. You have Dan Wardle will bring a superhero reading road. Can you explain
yes.
what that is?
Dan Wardle is part of Iowa Public Television, and he does a children's program. And so he is following that superhero theme that the library has going on this summer. And he'll be at the Banshell Park, and that's 9:30 on Thursday morning. And he'll do a presentation and doing his reading program at the Banshell Park.
So, Allison, this is quite an array of events. Events, times, places, things. Is there a list of your
yes.
Events on your website?
Yes. And you'll find a link right on our homepage. There's a button that says Celebrate the 4th in Ames, and there's a link to a press release that we put out with details on all of these things. There's a link to a poster if you have a spot in your business or in your organization that you'd like to print out a poster that has all these events on it. You can print that out, and then, of course, a link to our event calendar that has details mm-hmm. on each of the individual events. So,
and your website
is visitames.com.
Visitames.com.
Right.
And as always, we'll put a link to that on our homepage.
Wonderful.
And instead of trying to get all these various websites,
right.
we'll send them to your home, your website where
yes.
they're all listed very carefully.
Exactly.
Okay. Well, thank you. That is the 4th.
Yes.
Exciting weekend for Ames, as it is for the rest of the country. Anything else in July that we should talk about?
Well, you know, I mentioned that Farmhouse was going to have the Gilbert Tractor Club with them on the 4th. We also have this week a tractor show in the area out at the Central Iowa Expo site, the WHO Tractor Ride, which is in their 19th year. They have 600 people registered and lots of old tractors out at the Central Iowa Expo site, which is the location of the Farm Progress Show. It's out on Highway 30 at Highway 17 between Ames and Boone. I was out there yesterday as they did their registration. And each day, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, they'll be taking the tractors on the road. So today they are headed from Expo site over towards Story City, and they'll be stopping and having lunch at the EB Trailers facility along I-35 there in Story City.
So and is this like a caravan?
Yes, they're doing a caravan of hundreds of old tractors.
Wow.
So you'll see them in the area because, mm-hmm. again, they'll be going towards Story City today.
And they're going where? Along what route?
They'll use county highways mostly. I think they go up Highway 17, over mm-hmm. on E-18, 65, over through Story City. So they'll be going right down Broad Street in Story City throughout the morning.
So if you take a trip to Story City today, you'll see the tractors.
Yep. Exactly. Very nice. And then after, and they'll be there for lunch for a couple of hours, and then they'll get back on. And this afternoon, they're going to the Hanson Eggs Pavilion over on Mortenson Road, and then back to the expo site. And they leave the tractors there overnight. If you'd like to go out and see them there, you can. Tomorrow, they're going down towards Kelly and then over through Huxley, and they'll be at the Monsanto Ag Learning Center over the lunch hour, and then back through, and they're going to go to the Ledges. And then on Wednesday, they are going to do a circle over through Boone. So it'll be quite a sight to see all of those tractors, and they've got it timed out so about every 15 minutes, another 50 leave the Central Iowa Expo. So mm-hmm. it'll be a huge caravan of wow. tractors. So kind of fun if you're a tractor person, you can get out and find them throughout the community. And there's some information on our website about that as well.
Very nice. Well, this is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. And I'm Ursula Rudenberg with Vrad Dvardi, and we are speaking with Allison Walter from the Ames Convention and Visitors Bureau about public ways to enjoy July. Allison, before we finish, any last words?
To remind people, they can always get information on our website, visitames.com, and there's so much to do in this community. We're really blessed with that, and so take advantage of it. There's always something to do. Jump on the website and see what's going on for the day.
Okay, thank you. We are going to go out with a little bit of music before we close the show.
You have been listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where three times a week we explore people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. Earlier in the show, Allison Walter was here to give a monthly update from the Visitors and Convention Bureau about public events to enjoy in our area, especially since the 4th of July is right around the corner. We will have a link on our website's homepage to the website of the Convention and Visitors Bureau, just in case you want to look up any events. Our website is khoifm.org. That's khoifm.org.
Earlier in the show, Virad Duarte provided a report on the ISU student-run farm, including a guest, Bryn Tackley, and we thank him for coming. We've been listening to the music of Yes during the break, Roundabout by Yes. Chris Squire, the bass guitarist and co-founder of Yes, which is the 1970s progressive rock band. And really, its only consistent member died last Saturday. Squire is arguably the most influential bass guitarist to date that's ever really lived. He died at the age of 67 of leukemia.
Today's show was engineered by Jonah DeGeest. Our theme song is, as always, is Backtracking by Tom Richards and Al Harris. You can find a recording of today's show on the homepage of khoifm.org, including links to information about our topics and guests. Thanks to our webmaster, Ron Carson, for posting those.
Please remember that you, as the listener, are the most important part of KHOI and of Local Talk, because through your participation as an audience and your generous donations, our show exists and has meaning. Thank you for listening, and we will see you again on the radio.